from the 915 to H-Town, from the Panhandle Plains to the Valley, and everywhere in between. This is the 50-50 Podcast, powered by College Promoters USA. Join me, Hector Cano, as we cover the Texas high school club and college soccer landscape, along with an inside look at the college soccer recruiting scene. The 50-50 Podcast is a platform about the people and for the people who are dedicated to the beautiful game.
College Promoters USA, founded and located in San Antonio, operates as the only family-owned college recruiting company in Texas that brings a truly professional, local, and face-to-face approach to area high school student athletes and their families. If your son or daughter is serious about college athletics, call them at 210-494-6363 or visit collegepromotersusa.com anytime. College Promoters USA, the best investment a parent can make in their high school student athlete.
Here we go. It's another edition of the 50-50 Podcast, powered by College Promoters USA. They are America's premier college prep program and high school student athlete marketing service since 1997. Located locally here in San Antonio, Texas, you can find them in the Ventura Plaza Shopping Center. You can also find more information on them on social media at College Promoters USA. That is on Instagram, again, College Promoters USA. You can also get more information on them on Twitter at SATX Recruiting. Again, that's SATX Recruiting, as well as on their website at collegepromotersusa.com. My next guest, he is our third returning guest, comes right back to us from the great state of Texas, but currently up north in the white north. He is the head women's soccer coach of the University of Pittsburgh Panthers, as well as the Nigerian women's national team, Coach Randy Waldrum. Coach, how are you?
I'm doing well, thank you. How are things down south?
I'm not going to complain to you because I'm sure they're a lot warmer probably than you right now, right?
Well, I would imagine, and with not the snow as well. Yes.
How is the weather up there right now?
You know, it's in the 20s. We got about a foot of snow in the last couple of days, so it's been a little cool.
All right, awesome. But you were also previously at Notre Dame, so I know you're well versed in all that.
I'm used to a foot of snow all the way through, you know, April, living in South Bend all those years. Absolutely.
Right. So, Coach, I know obviously never want to insult anyone's intelligence, but at the same time, for our new listeners, right, that maybe never heard the name before, all right, may have just landed on planet Earth. Give us just briefly a little bit of a little inside background of where you've been and where you're from, where you've been, and how'd you end up at Pitt and with the Nigerian women's national team?
Yeah, no, great. Just obviously born and raised in Irving, Texas. So definitely a Texas boy. Went to school at Midwestern State, was drafted by the Los Angeles Skyhawks in the pros. That league folded after a very short stint. And so I realized I needed a real job. And the only job back in the day where you can make a living and coach, you know, was through high school or college soccer. And so I went back to my roots at Irving MacArthur High School, and I taught there for 5 years and coached the boys' varsity and junior varsity teams at Irving MacArthur. Left Irving MacArthur, went to the college scene, became an assistant for Shellis Hyman at SMU for a year, and then was able to land the Tulsa job at University of Tulsa. Spent about 6 years there, found out my first experience coaching women, because back in those days, a lot of us coaches coached both the men and women at the same time. Right. You know, you rarely see that nowadays, but that's the way it was back in the 80s. And but coached there 6 years, and then the opportunity at Baylor University came open to start the program. So I actually started that program at Baylor from its infancy. And after 3 years, we'd done really well, won the first ever Big 12 championship, and got the opportunity to go to Notre Dame. Spent 14 years there, winning a couple national championships and playing in eight Final Fours while we were there. And then Hector made the decision that, you know, I wanted to be challenged in the pro game. And so I came back to Texas and started the Houston Dash. I was the first coach there of the Dash for 4 seasons. And then when they decided to make that change there at the Dash, then I decided to go back to the college game. And that's when the doors opened for me at Pitt. And so I've been here 4 seasons now, trying to resurrect a program that's been was in a really bad place when we took it over. And we've really, in 4 years, started to turn it around. So that's kind of the quick synopsis. In the meantime, I've picked up a second job along the way. Obviously, all along my career, I've always worked with the U.S. Women's National Team side of things with either our U18s, our U23s. Been into a couple of senior team camps when Pia was the head coach. So I had a chance to work with Tony several times and Lauren Gregg. So that opened the door a few years back when I was at Notre Dame to go to Trinidad and Tobago. And kind of in conjunction with my days at Notre Dame, I took on the Trinidad and Tobago senior women's national team. And then I think in this last year, got the opportunity to do the same. And my AD at Pitt's been gracious to let me do both. And so I'm coaching the senior women's national team for Nigeria right now as well.
Great stuff, Coach. And, you know, when you lay that out, that brief kind of that synopsis of the bio there, there's one trend. It's like you consistently go in places where you've been the first, whether it's right standing up the program or I guess reviving the program.
Yeah.
At any one spot, was there along the way, was there one place that you felt maybe kind of really surprised you in terms of how just the, maybe not how quick the success you had, but you just, maybe you weren't entirely sure. You were committed to the job, but you weren't entirely sure. It's like, hey, if this could go one direction or the other, that really kind of stood out to you as to maybe the, not how the success you had, but maybe how quick you had it.
Yeah, really. I think the one that really probably surprised me at how quickly we were successful was the Baylor job starting from scratch, because I got hired in January, which is obviously the kind of quote off season for colleges, right. Although there's really never an off season. But so I worked with the club team through that spring just to see if there were any players that we could bring into the varsity team in the fall. And we really only picked up two players off the club team to bring in with us to the new team. And, you know, right away that very first year, I think this speaks to the talent in Texas, to be honest with you, because from January till August, I really hit the road and logged in the miles on my my company car all over the state of Texas. And, you know, that first year we went 17-3, won our first 10 games in a row, which was really a surprise, and went on and had a great year. You know, losing to A&M in the conference semifinal, I believe. Beat Texas during the year. In fact, our time at Baylor in 3 years, we never lost to Texas. And in 3 years' time, you know, we had not only won the Big 12 in 3 years' time, but we'd made the NCAA tournament and gone, you know, two or three rounds deep into the NCAA tournament. So that one really, I didn't know how long it would take, but that one happened a lot quicker than I anticipated. And I think it was obviously the support of the university, but we had some great kids, some great talent. An interesting story is the opening game at Baylor, we played the University of Pittsburgh at in Waco.
Oh, wow.
And the opening game. And I can remember they scored on us in the first couple of minutes of the game. And I'm thinking, this could be a long year, right? We came back and we won that game 8-1. So it was interesting. I tell that story here at Pitt a lot now, and I just reverse it, right? Obviously. That was the first game, but it's ironic how those things kind of come full circle.
Right. A bit of foreshadowing there, I guess. Huh?
Yeah,
that's awesome. So, can't get lost in the middle of that incredibly impressive resume, Coach, that your roots were here, right? You started really as a Texas high school soccer coach, right?
And, well, I did. Yeah.
I did forget to ask you the last time though, while you were teaching, what subject? I forgot to ask you that.
Well, interesting. The first year I was there, I taught American history and world history. But my degree was in political science. So, I think a year or two into my 5 years there, an opening came for government. So then I went in and taught American government, the rest of my time there, which I liked much better. I had, you know, you take it as an older student, you know, whereas American history, I've got mostly the freshmen in those classes. And then the, you know, government back then, I don't know how it is now, but it was only a semester. So about the time you got tired of the classroom, you got a new class in for the second semester. But I had a great time. I actually went to as a student, I went to Irving MacArthur High School. And then when I came back to teach, I got a job at the same high school that I went to. So that was interesting because a lot of the teachers that had taught me as a student were teachers, and now they were my peers when I came back. So that was it took a little getting used to, but you know what? I wouldn't have traded it for anything. I think the roots that I got there, not only is developing me as a coach, and, you know, I probably learned as much as my players did back in those days. And I just got an affinity for high school soccer. You know, I often have club coaches and student athletes, prospects that we're recruiting, you know, will always ask me, you know, hey, coach, you know, what do you think about club or high school? Because she kind of wants to play high school, but her club doesn't want her to. And, right. you know, where do you fall on that line of things? And I've always believed in high school soccer because I think it's requires different things than the club environment, you know, and you can't replicate playing for your school. You can't replicate the peer support that you get in a high school. The club soccer, you know, as much as they try, they can't replicate that. I think it gives a club player a chance to learn and develop. Maybe if they're not leaders on their club team, maybe they have to develop that leadership quality on a high school team, or maybe they have to carry a little bit more weight, you know, on a high school team than they do with their. So there's all kinds of things that I think are very beneficial. And in some cases, I mean, obviously there's some very good high school teams out there that may be better than the club team that they're playing for. So it works both ways on right. it. But I've always said, you know, I would have never been one to have believed in saying, no, go straight club, bypass high school, because I just think that's something special to play for your school.
Yeah, I was at a game. I was covering a game about 2 weeks ago, maybe. Must have had about 1,200 people at it. And, you know, not a knock on club, but when was the last time you saw that at a club game, right? Yeah.
You're not getting that environment. You're absolutely not.
And what can't get lost on someone if they watch both games long on a club game, a high school game long enough is the fire, the passion that you see a lot of these kids when they're playing for wearing the colors of their school in front of their community, in front of their peers. It's a different type of passion.
Yeah, no question about it. And like you said, with the fans and the parents and the school getting behind it, you know, I can remember when I was coaching at Irving MacArthur, I had guys like Tom Stone that's out at Texas Tech now as the head coach. Tom Stone played for me. Rusty Troy, that played many years for the Dallas Sidekicks, played for me. But Brian Bosworth was going to school. I had him in my government class. And he was a former soccer player. A lot of people don't realize this, but as a youth player, he was a goalkeeper. And I can remember him rallying not only the football team, but all the students, you know, the student body to come out and watch us play. Our big rival back in that day was Duncanville High School. And, you know, that environment was really, it almost was like a college environment. It was great. And he did a great job in rallying the troops to come out. So you're right. It's got a special feel to it, no doubt.
The Buzz. Well, that's definitely the first time that name has been dropped on this podcast. So we're definitely talking some history here. So
there you go.
Yeah. So segueing here, Coach, speaking of history, talk to us briefly. Every college coach that I've been talking to, and not just on the podcast, but even off the podcast, I've asked about just briefly, if you can, talk to us about when we look back at the year that was in 2021. What can you tell us in terms of what was really the longest year, calendar year in college soccer history, you know, from the spring and then that very short turnaround, the summer, very short off season, and then right back at it in the fall. What were the lessons learned maybe from your perspective there at Pitt and maybe even also within the conference, right, the ACC?
Sure. Yeah. You know what? A lot of lessons and a lot of them off the field. I mean, we were fortunate in that we were one of the schools that played in the fall and in the spring. So we did about half of our schedule, you know, in the fall, and we came back in the spring when a lot of schools, you know, bypassed the fall, put it on hold, and then came back, played the spring. So, you know, we were allowed basically still the 20 games total. And we were just afraid. We made the decision to play in the fall. We were just afraid, not knowing, you know, COVID was new to all of us. We were afraid that the spring would get canceled altogether. We wanted to make sure we got some games in. So we only played maybe 13 or so of our games, 14 maybe in the fall. And then we came back and played some games in the spring. So it really made for a long year for us. But in some ways, it was a good year because games weren't crammed in like they are in the typical college season. You know, you play two games a week. And so in the spring, we could spread those games out, play a game a weekend. And it's more like the 21st century model that the men are trying to implement right now, that I'm a big believer in, that I think that's the way we should be doing it. But I think the lessons that we probably took from it was, you know, more things off the field. Like, if you can imagine how all of us as adults had to handle COVID, but these young people that are, whether they're in high school or club or, you know, that had their restrictions, but, you know, think about the college athletes and what your college life was like and mine, you know, to be shut down and locked in these little pods and in your families and you can't leave you know, all the testing and all the protocols that we had to follow. You know, I think we learned more about each other as people and as teammates, because it really took a lot. There were a lot of teams that couldn't make it through the season because players would break protocol. And there were other teams that, like ours, that really stayed firm and true to each other and wanted it badly enough that they sacrificed everything else to stay in our own little pod. And so we fortunately didn't have those issues that some other universities did, but it told us a lot about our individual players as people, you know, and what was important to them and how they were going to handle controversy and difficult times, because it's been, and we're not over it now, you know, we're kind of still back in this, you know, we've got this resurgent going on now you know, hopefully it doesn't affect anything this spring, but you know, who knows? The ones I really feel bad for, to be honest with you, from the recruiting side of it, is the 21s that hadn't committed. And then the 22 class, those are the ones that really got hit hard because, you know, we were obviously on lockdown with recruiting for a year. You know, it was really hard for the 22s that hadn't committed because now they're against the eight ball to try to scramble, you know, when things started to open back up to find a home. I think the other things we're seeing with the 23s is a lot of them, as soon as the recruiting opened back up, a lot of them started committing right away.
Yeah.
And we chose to slow it down and say, it's been a year since we've seen these players play. So we're not going to base on making an offer and getting a kid in now that we haven't seen in the last 12, 13, 14, 15 months. And so we just purposely said, even if we lose some good kids, we're going to slow it down and get out and see the 23. So I was amazed when we were down in Florida for ECNL, how many of the 23 classes already committed. But I think you'll find a lot of those kids probably made mistakes because they rushed into some decisions, and coaches that made mistakes by not going out and watching them play. A lot can change, especially in a young female athlete. A lot can change in a year and a half of not seeing them. So I would just, you know, tell those players that haven't committed to not panic. There's still opportunities out there for them. You know, the other hard part of this is financially, you know, with the scholarship money, because what got added is all of our players, freshmen, everybody that was here during that COVID year gets that extra year back. So if they're on scholarship money could be affected all the way up. For us, for example, we had some, you know, young freshmen and, you know, on money and all the way up through seniors because our team's young. So, you know, it's going to affect our recruiting budget probably up through 2024. To an extent, if we want those players back, because we didn't budget that money for the extra year for those guys. So, well, that's gonna affect those recruits a little bit in those years as well.
And if you can share, how many super seniors did you have this past year, this fall?
Let me think about this a second. We had we only had three seniors, actual seniors this year. So what's kind of happened with us is when we took over in 2018, the team, I alluded to this earlier, the team had 22-year-old history and the team had only won, had a winning record in only two of those 22 years. So when we took it over, it was really in a bad place. So what we did is after 2018, we got in too late to recruit new players. So we just kind of, 2018 went through the season with what we inherited. 2019, we made a concerted effort to bring in 19 new players. We brought in 19 new freshmen. We brought in four transfers. And we basically worked with those players that we inherited and looked to help them find a place where they could play, because they just weren't going to play with where we were headed. And I think it's important that a player has a good college experience and you know, we don't want them sitting around not playing for 3 or 4 years. So we helped them get out, brought in a new group. And then what's happened, Hector, is each year we brought in, you know, the 2020, we brought in another 6 or 8 freshmen that were better than some of the freshmen we brought in 19. And then the same thing in 21, we brought in 11 freshmen. And so they're replacing some of the players from 2 years earlier. So that's part of the building process when you start building a program, kind of either from scratch, like we did at Baylor, or Pitt, which is almost like from scratch because we just had to blow it up and start all over again. So what that's kind of done is tied our monies up a little bit. So until we start graduating that 2019 class. And but we got 3 that were natural seniors that could move on. I think all 3 are going to move on out of that particular class. Actually, I take that back. We had 4. So only one of them is going to come back that we've asked to come back and play in their COVID year. The other 3, pretty much, not that we didn't want them back, but the other 3 pretty much were in this for their degree, and they've gotten their degree and they're ready to go off and make a difference in the world. They're not trying to get through the pro path or anything like that. So their focus was on the academic piece of it. And, you know, we support that 100%.
Right. So for our student athletes, our parents, you know, our PSAs and parents that may be listening, talk to us. You mentioned Florida just a little while ago, Coach, right? In the showcase down there. From a coach's perspective, kind of walk us through when you attend these events, when you attend these showcases. So whether it be you, your coaching staff, what's the game plan that you're usually that you're walking into these with, and what are you looking for?
Yeah, you know, it's next to impossible to go see every player that writes to you, because us, just like I'm sure every other school in the country, gets hundreds of emails, you know, prior to the upcoming event saying, come watch me play. And it's just, there's no way to physically, even with a staff of 3, which we're allowed to put out on the road recruiting, 3 players can't cover all the time slots and see all the players that write to us. But what we try to do is, obviously, we have a working list going into each of events of players that we know we're interested in and we want to see. Then what we do is we take those players that have written to us, and we also have them, you know, in our computers or in our spreadsheet, and we'll try to get out and see as many of those players as we can as well. And then the other thing that happens sometimes is you're going to watch one of the kids that you're supposed to have your eyes on, and you happen to see another kid on their team, or you see somebody that you're playing against that you like, and now you've added that player to your list and you want to see them again, you know, through the weekend. So you'd go back. But we do try to catch as many that write us as we can. It's just physically impossible. You know, I used to try to do that when I first got to Baylor University. I used to try to go see everybody that wrote. But what you ended up doing is spending 5 minutes at a game, 10 minutes at a game, trying to get a quick snapshot of what she looked like and then moving on to the next. And you don't get a real good opinion. You know, I like to see things. You know, I can identify a good player very quickly. I think we all can. You can see, you know, based on how you want to play, you should have a preconceived idea of what kind of player you're looking for. So for us, being a team that wants to build up and keep the ball and possess the ball, we were looking for technical players. So it's pretty easy to go identify somebody's technical ability fairly quickly, right? Or if some schools are a direct team, then they're probably looking for more athletes that can run, right? And bigger, stronger, faster. And so I'm sure they can find that player relatively quickly when they get to the field. But the thing I like to see is I like to see those games where it's tight or they're losing and see how that player responds. Or if the coach is, you know, yelling at them from the sideline, how do they respond? If it's a wet, cold day, you know, how are they responding to it? Because you can learn a lot about the player to see how they interact with their teammates, with their coach when they get subbed on and subbed off. When conditions are tough, it's easy to shine when you're winning 3-4-0 and you're on top of a team. But now when the adversity sets in and you need a goal, you know, what's kind of inside that player? Mm-hmm. So I like to look deeper into it than just their ability. And the only way you can do that is by watching and watching them in those conditions. So mm-hmm. we do try to get to as many as we can, but we go in there with a pretty good idea of the core of players that we're really, really looking at. And we do, listen, for all the parents out there too, we do our homework prior. We don't just take it based off of the email that we get. Those emails that we get from those recruits will spur a phone call. You know, we're on the phone with the club coaches. Okay, got a letter, you know, got an email from this player. Tell me about her, right? And you know, can she play at our level? What's she like as a kid? Is she coachable? What's her academics like? So we're getting a lot of that information on those players before we ever arrive to the tournament.
Yeah. Yeah, and you know, speaking of that, you're talking about recruiting and so previously, the last episode of the podcast, we had, you know, Coach Marcus Wood, who's now the head women's soccer coach at DBU at Dallas Baptist.
Right.
And I mentioned to him about what I've seen definitely since the time of this podcast, which is only a year old, but within the last 2 years, and maybe it's a pandemic, you know, response, is yeah. I've seen this resurgence of, and maybe not at your power fives of the world, but I've seen this resurgence of recruiting taking, and I can't speak for Pennsylvania either, but here in Texas is there's been this resurgence of recruiting college coaches putting in the work at high school events, high school games, high school tournaments. Wow. So that's been seeing that kind of that resurgence happen has been pretty special to watch. And it kind of bucks the trend of that college coaches don't have time, don't make the time, don't attend high school events.
Yeah.
So I find that to be interesting.
And probably a lot of that somewhat to an extent has to do with COVID. You know, the coaches are shaking the bushes to find those last minute 22s, and maybe the only really good place to see it is through high school tournaments. Some of it, I do think a lot of the smaller schools will recruit the high schools more than a lot of the larger schools will. I'm still under the belief that, you know, if there's a good player out there in this country with the network that we have, it's really hard to stay hidden. You know, so whether that's through a club coach calling me about a kid, whether that's a high school coach calling me about a kid, whether that's getting video, if I get a video from a high school kid in a high school game and she looks the part, then I'm going to make it a point to get out and see her. Right. And so it's never one of those and I can't speak for other Division I schools, but we're not one of those schools that would sit back and go, no, we're just recruiting club. Right. And a lot of the club benefits is just like I mentioned down in Florida, you know, there's hundreds of teams playing over 18 fields. So just from a pure budgetary standpoint, it makes sense to fly down there for a couple of days and see hundreds of kids play versus flying in on a Friday night to see a high school game and spending the same travel costs. So that's the hard dilemma for a high school program. But we're out here up in our area, and we catch the high school games. We go to the preseason high school tournaments and the state tournaments here in high school too, because it's, you got to shake the bushes if you want to find those diamonds in the rough, and sometimes you're not playing club. So we believe in that as well.
Yeah. And, you know, and we were, you know, we're talking here in terms of the college world, talking club, talking high school, and, you know, you just came from where all of those coaches and many, many more, even at the professional level, semi-pro level, just all walks of life, right? You just came from, you just were in attendance at the United Soccer Coaches Convention last week in Kansas City. What were your thoughts on that? What was your takeaway after it being digital or virtual, if you will, last year? And so first time, a lot of people there back together in 2 years there at the United Soccer Coaches headquarters. They're based out of Kansas City. What was that experience like?
Well, it was great to get back and see people physically after a year off. You know, a lot of people may not know this, but I was actually the president of our association back in 2008, 2009. Back then it was the NSCAA, and, right. and we've since rebranded to United Soccer Coaches. So I have a real affinity for the association. You know, I believe in it. I believe in all it's about. And I think, you know, we're in a transition period right now with the CEO, Lynn Burling Manuel, has stepped down. Jeff Van Dusen is now taking over as the new CEO. And I think Jeff and the board of directors and that entire convention staff did a really bang up job of making this work and still this COVID environment that we're in. I think I didn't see the final figures yet, but I think we were somewhere between 70 and 75% of the normal attendance of a convention. And we generally generate about 10,000 coaches, referees, administrators, everybody that's involved in the game are at that convention. Right. So, you know, we may have been 3,000 or 4,000 short of that, but considering the COVID year, it was just good to get back, see the guest clinicians on the field doing their job, a lot of great classroom sessions, and then just connecting with old friends, you know, which was really, really good to see as well. So I thought they did a really, really nice job.
Yeah. And speaking of old friends, you know, you're on a podcast here, so I got to ask you your experience on Podcast Row. I know you made a few visits. Talk to us about that experience, that atmosphere at the convention.
Yeah, they do a really neat thing. You know, a couple of years ago, they started bringing the podcast in. And then I think Sean and Nick and those guys over there with their podcasts have been really proactive and really trying to generate more podcasts and opening up kind of this quote podcast row. So now there is one section of the convention where anybody that does podcasts can come into the convention, and they were lined up. There probably were 8 or 10 different podcast people there doing podcasts all throughout the day. I know they had me on. I think they had Eric Winaldo was on. Jay Demerit was on.
Yeah, Jay Demerit as well.
Yeah. Uh-huh. Well, you know, so they've done a really good job. But one of the things they also do, a lot of people don't realize, is they'll actually grab the mic and they'll leave podcast roll, and they Sean and Becky Burley goes around and they corner people and
on the spot interviews.
Right? On the spot interviews, you know, and you got to come up quick with some of the things that they want you to do. But it gives it a fun, you know, twist to it. I got a chance to sit in with Anna Witte and Dean Linky and their podcast as well. And they're very different. You know, I think Sean was wanting to hear camp stories and, you know, any kind of funny stories that I had at my time over the years. So we shared a story about one of our campers that was accused of pooping out the window. He got a good kick out of that story. And
I actually heard this one. Yeah.
Yeah. So whereas
it was popping, not pooping.
Yeah. They popped and too many people at Notre Dame couldn't read that email. Popping and not pooping. And, you know, I just remember having this visual of going, how does a girl poop out the window anyway, you know? Anyway, that's a story we can tell at another time.
Yeah.
But, you know, the other one was pretty much soccer, you know, more kind of my history of what I've done and, you know, kind of a more of a roadmap question for the young coaches that maybe are trying to break into the game as well.
Yeah. I heard that story. I was hearing it when they were broadcasting live to, I think, Facebook, right?
Yeah.
And I was like, all right, where's Coach Waldrum going with this one?
Yeah.
I was listening to that. And I know they had, you know, you mentioned Eric Winaldo, Jay Demerit, to name a few. I think they had, his name escapes me right now, Mr. Beast Mode Soccer. David Copeland Smith. Yeah. And then also shout out to the Duck Dick brand girls. I know as an ambassador, I got to give them a shout out. So
right.
I know they had them on as well. So,
yeah.
So that's good, you know, and, you know, coach, we're talking about conventions here, and, you know, I believe, as I understand it, that next biggest convention, soccer coaches convention in the country, is the one that normally happens down here in Texas, usually late November, usually that weekend right before Thanksgiving. The TASCO Soccer Coaches Convention, the Texas Association of Soccer Coaches, their convention, which has been taking place in Galveston for a while now. What are your thoughts in terms of, you know, as I understand it, you know, definitely, you know, your support for the game here in terms of Texas high school soccer, the club game as well, but just also in the thoughts of maybe being able, wanting to come down and support sure. the soccer coaches down here, support Texas high school soccer, and maybe even attend and present at the TASCO convention.
Sure. Well, obviously, like I said earlier, when we talked about kind of my career, high school soccer will always have a place in my heart. And they have for years done a great job. Back in the day, I think Guy Greening was a president there for a while, and they've gone through quite a few of the coaches that that I grew up playing against with my teams. And they've always done a good job. I know they bring in Shellis Hyndman quite a bit back, you know, into their convention. You know, I've gone out to Nebraska to their high school association several times and presented there. I would love to come back to Texas and present if that opportunity arise. Whatever arise for me, I would love to do that. I just, I'm a big believer in these type things because a lot of times, you know, and I know other coaches besides high school coaches could get there if they're members, but, you know, high school coaches sometimes have a difficult time with the coaching education piece because, for example, in Texas, our convention that we just came back from is during your high school season. So a lot of them can't get away and see those field sessions and get an opportunity to continue their growth as coaches. So I think Tasco does a great job of giving all of the high school coaches in the state an opportunity to continue to grow. I know some of the school districts also allow some time off and maybe even pay for it for the coaches to go, which I think is great for those districts that do that. I'm a big believer that, you know, no matter what your resume says you are, we all continue to learn. You know, I sat through several this weekend that maybe I didn't pick up a lot out of the field session, but I might pick up a way they said something or phrases that they used or a little piece of their session that I go, I really like that piece. I'll steal that one and implement it. And we're all continually learning. So I think it's a great organization. And we'd love to get back one day. I know Tom Brown, good friend of mine, presents down there pretty regularly. And would love to get back to Texas to do that.
Yeah, they've, you know, big shout out to Tasco. They've done great work, phenomenal work. I've seen it. I've really seen that convention evolve over the last couple of years and definitely want to get back there. And you mentioned, you know, the United, that's one of the big things that a lot of people don't know is that the United Soccer Coaches Convention, high school soccer coaches in Texas can attend. We're in season, right? We're really hitting the heart of the start of the season. Yeah. So, and I haven't been able to attend one since I left, since I left the Air Force Academy when I was coaching at the Air Force Academy. Definitely. I know they'd love to have you and we'll see. Hopefully maybe we can make that happen. So definitely love to have you back down here, Coach.
Absolutely.
So big shout out to them. And I know speaking to, you know, you were talking about speaking of United Soccer Coaches, one shout out I forgot to give is you mentioned their podcast. My man, Dean Linky, love listening to his stuff. Big fan of his work as well. So we start to transition here a little bit, Coach. You know, we've talked about the season that was at Pitt. We talked a little bit in terms of just the COVID year, the really long year. Talked about your, you know, everything that you've been experiencing since then, but then also the other piece that we can't ignore is your role with, as you know, as the man in charge of the Nigerian women's national team. I guess to start with, tell us why the Nigerian women's national team, and tell us what you have coming up.
Well, what happened really is the time period of 4 or 5 months after I left the Dash and was not at Pitt, you know, and I was kind of just trying to plot my next move, so to speak. Sunil Gulati was our president at the time with U.S. Soccer. So he had contacted me because he knew the president in Nigeria and they were looking for a coach. So he asked me if I was interested. And at the time I was, and I said I was, and they actually had announced me in September as a coach. And I saw it in the media because I started, my social media started blowing up. But I had never once spoken to Nigeria or anybody from the Federation. And so from September through about November, I was trying to reach the president and get all of this sorted out and never got responses, you know, a typical kind of an African nation that's a little bit behind administratively, right? So then the Pitt job came and I took it. And so I bypassed Nigeria for that year and they brought in a Swedish coach, and he took them for a year, and then I think got a little bit disgruntled or whatever his reasons were, and he left. So then they called me back to see if I would take the job again, and I told them I would, but the only way I would do it is if they could work it out where I could stay in my current role at Pitt, because I wasn't going to leave what we started here. And the other side of it is just things down in Africa aren't run like the women's national team here. I'll leave it that way and let you read between the lines. So I've taken it on. I've been there about a year. Our preparation is everything's focused on obviously the World Cup. So we've actually already started our World Cup qualification. So back in November, we played Ghana home and away in the first round of our qualifying. We won at home 2-0. We lost away 1-0. So we advanced on the away goal. And so now I'm getting ready to leave on Monday for about 3 weeks to Nigeria because we have two games, a home and away against Ivory Coast. So it's been a unique experience because a lot of our players obviously are playing outside of Nigeria around the world. Yeah. So we're only getting those players in during an international window. So we've really struggled to find training and preparation time. It's just been more trying to get the team as organized as quickly as we can, and then doing a lot of Zoom calls and trying to do some of the coaching over virtual methods, because we just haven't had, we had one camp in the summer that we had the majority of them in for a week in Vienna, Austria. But outside of that, it's really, they come in, for two games and, they come in two or three days early and you don't have much training time. You're just prepared for that game.
Yeah. What can you share with us? What can you give us, if maybe the Cliff Notes version of the logistics coach, from what you understand over these next 3 weeks and those two World Cup qualifiers, kind of a home and home with Ivory Coast, what will that look like from you leave here next Monday and how does that play out? Arrive?
Yeah, I'll
training days.
It takes me a couple of days. So I'll leave Monday and I'll get there Wednesday, Wednesday morning, just with the time change and stuff is all. And then we'll actually get started with some training. We'll train. Part of the team will arrive because, we'll be in Nigeria. So the out of the players I've selected, the ones that are local, their clubs will release them. So I'll probably have 15 or 18 of those players the first week to train. And then during that first week, some of the internationals, their clubs will start releasing them and they'll come in. I would imagine around the 13th or 14th, we should have most everybody. And then our opening game is on the 18th. So, kind of a little bit of a camp just to see if we can get some training in before we play. And the first leg will be there in the capital city, Abuja, in their big stadium. And then we will leave after the game the following day and we'll head to the Ivory Coast, fly there. Because we play on the 23rd. So we actually probably have a day or so in between before we fly, but we'll fly out to Ivory Coast a couple of days before the 23rd to play that second leg. And then I'm on a plane to get right back here and I land, and the next day we're playing Penn State on the road. So, my assistants, I'm putting pressure on Ben and Dustin to say, make sure we got our team ready, right?
Yeah,
But wow. They did great. If I didn't have a good staff, if I didn't have those guys working for me at Pitt, it would be an almost impossible job to do because they know Ben, obviously being my son, knows exactly what I want. He's been with me. We won a national championship together at Notre Dame.
Right.
He's helped me with the dash a few times. He's helped me with Trinidad. So he knows, he's pretty much day to day running the show anyway. And so he knows what we want. And, like I said, that makes it easier for me to be able to go out and take some time with Nigeria. I'm usually not gone that long. I'm usually gone maybe 8 or 10 days every time I go with the team. Right. But this one with a camp in front of and the importance of this game, this one I'm gone a little bit longer than normal.
Yeah, and I figured as such when you mentioned that, when you said about 3 weeks, I kind of figured. So, yeah, good. So then you come back. You have Penn State, your spring season. So very briefly, what is your spring, what's your spring season look like? And really ultimately, Coach, what can you share with us in terms of what maybe has you most excited for the future of your program there at Pitt?
Well, the last 2 years, I'll answer your last question first. The last 2 years, we've really turned it around. During the COVID year, we went 11-5 and spent a few weeks in the top 25 national rankings. And then this past year, we finished 11-7. And same thing, finished, had a few weeks of a run into the top 25 again. And right. So now then the next step for us is, I think, because we're really kind of in that third year with those players we recruited in 2019, we feel like this is really we actually felt like we were good enough to have been in the NCAA tournament this past season. And I think we probably, if we would have beaten Virginia Tech, I think we'd have been in. Or if we would have beaten Wake Forest, I think we needed one more win against one more quality team and we would have got in. But we missed it this year. So I think next year I'm really excited because I think we should be in a position, you know, to consistently break in the top 25 and be an NCAA tournament team. You know, that's obviously the goal. So having been here only four short seasons and one of those seasons we kind of look at it as a wash because we played with what weren't really our players. In 3 years, we've really got this turned in a good direction quickly, considering they've had 22 years of, you know, futility, so to speak. So we're excited about it. And we all know there's no guarantees, but it's really exciting. So the spring, you know, obviously we're allowed those five playing dates under the NCAA rules. We're going to play, you know, we're trying to bite off as much strength as we can. We'll play Penn State. We'll play West Virginia. We'll play Ohio State. Then we've got a couple of games with teams not quite to that level. We'll play Youngstown because they're close. And then we're trying to get one of the NWSL teams to play us in our last playing day if we can. So, you know, it'll be a good – I mean, those three of those teams are top 25 teams and, you know, perennial NCAA tournament teams. And so, you know, we're looking forward to that. It should be a great challenge for us.
Yeah. Awesome. Yeah, that's going to be – that'll be a good action-packed spring for sure.
Yeah.
So – awesome. Well, Coach, thank you. We know you're going to stick around here for our second segment. We'll come back with our counterattack segment. We'll get to you'll get your second dose of where we get to pick on you a little bit, ask you some soccer, non-soccer questions. Mm-hmm. You did great. So let's see if you can follow it up with an encore of an exceptional performance from the last time you were here with us.
There's no way to prepare for this, is there? All right. I'll be as ready as I can.
All right. And for our listeners, don't go anywhere. We'll be right back after this brief message from our sponsors. From the 915 to H10.
College Promoters USA, founded and located in San Antonio, operates as the only family-owned college recruiting company in Texas that brings a truly professional, local, and face-to-face approach to area high school student athletes and their families. If your son or daughter is serious about college athletics, call them at 210-494-6363. Or visit collegepromotersusa.com anytime. College Promoters USA, the best investment a parent can make in their high school student athletes.
All right, and we're back with Coach Randy Waldrum, head women's soccer coach of the University of Pittsburgh Panthers, or Pitt Panthers, as most people know them, as well as the Nigerian women's national team. So, all right, Coach, counterattack time. You ready to dive in?
Let's try it.
All right, so right off the bat. Something you wish you would have been told prior to entering coaching?
Oh, something I wish I would have been told. Be prepared for things you cannot prepare for. You know, that's the best way to put it. Because I think, you know, we're always so, everything's so planned out. And coaches obviously can relate to this. You think you're going to run this particular session and then you get there and you don't have half the kids that you expected. Or you want to run an attacking session and your attackers are all sick and they're out. And you know, so being prepared for the things that you think you're prepared for, but not really. Yeah.
Yeah. That actually happened to me today. You know, I'm in season right now. And my two team captains were out today. So, yeah, so that was like, okay, we have to flip-flop our whole training session. So,
that's right.
Yeah, so not that it was exclusively dependent upon them, but they were obviously big factors of what we were going to try to do today. So
we have to be good at improvising, that's for sure.
Absolutely, absolutely. Yes, sir. Favorite number and why?
Six, which is what I wore when I was playing. And because back in those days, it was back when you had the old sweeper, you know, instead of the zone defending. Yeah. And I was a big Franz Beckenbauer fan. So I was number six, and I've kind of stuck to that all the way through. So my kids even joke every time we get ready to play a game or a scrimmage or something, you know, whoever gets the ball first, I say, pick a number between 1 and 10. And the kids now all know, oh, it's six, you know, pick six. Like, it's always,
you never change it up on them. It's always six.
It's always six. So, you know, the ones that have been around know it. And the new ones always get, you know, it takes them a little bit to catch on.
Yeah. They're rookies. It takes them a while. Yeah. All right. Are you a, meme or GIF guy, GIF, whatever we want to call it, over on the cell phone, meme or GIF guy.
You know what? I'm neither. I don't even know how to do it. I wouldn't know how to put either on my phone.
Emojis, coach? You're not an emojis guy either?
No
emojis.
No. No.
Oh wow.
My social media is the extent of it is Twitter, and I'm lucky if I can get that written up and out sent out the way I meant it to be. So yeah. I don't push buttons that I don't understand, and so I really don't. I'm very. You would laugh if you saw my staff at the office. Every time I can't even get the television on, I have to get one of the guys come in on my remote. So so definitely can't do those things. So I'd say neither.
Yeah. Well, I was gonna say you do great on Twitter. You do great on social media. Let me take that back.
Other than that,
Manchester United stuff you put on there from time to time, you do great with everything else. So.
Yeah, there you go.
All right. Favorite movie quote?
You can't handle the truth.
There you go.
You can't handle the truth. I don't know why the ones that come to my mind, it doesn't mean they're my favorite movies. But, I guess for whatever reason, it stuck in my mind that the one on you can't put baby in the corner, right? Dirty Dancing. And I don't know why I'm not a Dirty Dancing fan, but that one comes to mind. But, you can't handle the truth would be the one I'd always.
Jack Nicholson there. All right. Yeah. Well, you were ready with that one. You let that one go quick.
That was good.
All right. Okay. So Randy Waldrum is appointed the soccer czar in America, right? In charge of all soccer today. What's one thing you'd change in soccer in America tomorrow? First thing.
Pay for play. I think that is the worst thing that we have happening in the world today, that our players have to pay to play club soccer. I understand it because I was around in the time when I first started coaching, we just coached the teams because we love coaching. And then in the Dallas area, they all of a sudden brought in an English guy here or there, and they started paying him so they could get this pro coach, right? And then that just snowballed, and now all the coaches are getting paid. And I think it's developed a sense of, and I'm not putting the blame anywhere, but it develops that sense of now parents have the right to impose their beliefs and because they're paying the money, and it creates that problem between the parent and the coaches. Coaches have to make decisions based on pay and keeping their job instead of based on developing and the player, and wins and losses become just the pay for pay model to me is just absurd. I think it's in an ideal world, we'd find corporate sponsors that help kids, and they would come in and pay coaches, and kids would play for free and just pay for uniforms or whatever, because I think it also puts a false sense on club players too. They pay money all these years, and they think it means they're going to get a scholarship. And most people don't realize there's not that many scholarships out there. Right. And the money they've paid in club dues over all their years, they probably could pay for their child's education. So pay for play is, I think, our biggest issue in our soccer in our country right now.
Yeah. Good one. Okay. So next one, you can't say Jack Nicholson or Patrick Swayze in this one, coach.
Okay.
Who would play you in a movie?
Well, I don't really know who would play me, but people joked with me when I was a little bit younger that they teased me about Don Johnson in Miami Vice, for whatever reason. So maybe Don Johnson. I don't know. Yeah.
First the Boz and now Don Johnson. Well, all right. Awesome. So next one, bucket list destination, place you want to go, you and the family before it's all said and done, coach.
Well, you're not going to be happy with this answer, but I want to go to Old Trafford. I haven't been there. So that's on my bucket
list. It's been a pleasure having you on the podcast, coach. We're going to wrap this up now.
You've never actually
been there, huh? The Theater of Dreams?
No, I really haven't. And I would like to not only go to Old Trafford, but I would want the only stadium I've been to, which was the old stadium, was I went to see Tottenham play in a Europa League game back when the coach, it was at Villa-Boas was the coach at Tottenham at the time.
Oh, yeah, I remember that guy.
Michael Newton, he was in, may have been one of his, near his last games, too, I think, that he was the coach there. Yeah. But that's the only stadium that I've been to, is the old stadium for Tottenham. So I would really like to make all the rounds, you know, just to see the atmosphere. I'd love to see the singing at Liverpool and, you know, the Never, We'll Never Walk Alone. And mm-hmm. I'd love to see Arsenal and obviously the new stadiums that are out there, too. But definitely bucket list is to go over and see. Yeah. You know, funny story, but, you know, Bobby Clark was with me at Notre Dame for all those years, and he played for Alex Ferguson back when they were both in Scotland, when Alex Ferguson was at Aberdeen. So Bobby knew that I always wanted. So for years, we'd always host a coaching clinic in the spring at Notre Dame. People would come from all over to come to our coaching clinic, and we'd always have guest clinicians. So for years, we kept trying to get Sir Alex to come in, and obviously he was in season, so he couldn't do it and couldn't do it. The year I leave to go to the Dash, he had retired. He comes into Notre Dame, and I miss him. But Bobby was gracious enough to get him to autograph a book to me, personalize it, and at least send it to me. So that was pretty special. But no, I've never gotten a chance to go over. So,
which book was it? The Leading book? I think, was it Leading? I think he had.
It was. Yes. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. It's, I have that one on the shelf.
Yeah.
Awesome. Yeah. It's, you know, you dropped that V.S. Bosch reference. I was like, man, wasn't he the coach right before Pochettino? Was it him?
Yes. Either before, maybe two coaches before. I can't.
Yeah. I was trying to remember that. Yeah. I hadn't heard that name in a while.
Well, you know, he left and went into, I think, car racing or something for a while. And I don't remember if he's back in soccer now or not.
So speaking of books there, Coach, current book you are reading or most recent book you read?
Well, it's probably the one that I've read most recently that I really, really enjoyed was The Gold Standard with Mike Krzyzewski. And I enjoyed that. I like reading books of other people in other sports just to see if I can pick up ideas, because I think there's a lot of player management things that we can learn from other sports. And I was really intrigued by that book because he shares a lot of stories about his time with as the Olympic coach. And one of the stories he shared, and I, for the life of me, I can't remember which player it was, but one that really struck me was he and Jerry Colangelo, you know, was the GM of the Olympic team. And I can remember that he said they were doing interviews for the Olympic players in their home. And one of the players arrived and rang the doorbell a few minutes early, and he was in his sweats. He'd just come back from practice. And the first thing he did is when he walked in the door, he said, "Can I use your restroom?" And he went straight back to the restroom, came out of the restroom, and he was changed into a suit. And so it was important for him to present himself that way. Yeah. You know, but he didn't have time to change coming, but he made it a point to go. And I just thought, that's really, you know, those kind of things really interest me. And the way he managed those players and handled those superstars, you know, with all of those, you know, those NBA players, that one is probably the last book that really kind of intrigued me.
Yeah. Yeah. Good read. Yeah. Awesome. I have not read that one. So The Gold Standard, right?
Gold Standard. Yep.
Yeah. Okay. Good. Awesome. Thank you for sharing that one.
You bet.
Hobby you discovered during the pandemic. Something maybe you took on that's maybe stayed with you a little bit still?
Well, we didn't really get out much at all. So I wouldn't say there was a hobby. I think we just more binged, you know, watching series on television. So I think, you know, I completed all of the Ozarks and all of, you know, the Yellowstone as much as we could.
I love Yellowstone.
Yeah. So I think we really binged watch a lot of series here around the house. You know, and it's probably not a wise thing to do. It probably wasn't the best usage of my time. Sure. Yeah. You know, but we really stayed around here. And so that's kind of what we did. Yeah.
So since then, since last time we had you on back a long time ago, back episode 4 to now, what's been the one that's kind of stood out to you? Is there one that really resonates with you? One particular series that you've kind of binged that you put at the forefront maybe?
Yeah, no, I really enjoyed Ozark. And that one's kicked back up again, so I've got to catch up with it.
Did that come out already? The new season released already?
They just started it. Yeah, I think
it
came out a week or two ago, so I think there might have been one or two shows. We watched House of Cards. I really like that because I'm, even though it's probably not exactly like the White House operates, but being a political science guy, I kind of liked all of that. So I enjoyed the House of Cards. Those were probably the two that I liked. That I like the most out of all the series. But we, listen, like I said, we did Yellowstone, we did Longmire, we did Queen of the South. I mean, you name it, we just about saw, you know, all of the series that were kind of out there. I didn't care for the one that came out. I could only watch one or two episodes of the one about the tiger, the guy in the tigers.
Oh, the Tiger King.
Yeah. I couldn't get into that. You know,
Still haven't seen it.
Everybody was getting into that, but it lost me really pretty much on episode one. So I was kind of out after that.
I think that one came like right as the pandemic was starting, I think. So it just, it was right when everyone was kind of on lockdown. So timing of it was pretty,
Because
I think, haven't they released a second season since then, I think?
You know, I don't even know. I haven't kept up. Yeah.
Okay. So last one, Coach, and this one's kind of a little bit of a deep one. But since you go back to February, March 2020 to now, maybe a lesson learned that really resonates with you since the start of the pandemic.
Well, I think probably the biggest thing, I think in the world that we live in, we're always questioning, you know, if the way we handle and do things is the right way or the wrong way. And I've probably through this time had to go back and really kind of self-reflect and evaluate how I've been doing things, not only at Pitt, but, you know, how I've done things at Nigeria. Because some of the progress doesn't come as fast as you want. And some of it comes in a different shape than you want it to come into.
Right.
And I think when we have time like this pandemic where you're not doing much else, but deep in thoughts, you know, kind of rehashing things since you're not out and about all the time. I think that's the one thing I learned is to trust, you know, to trust my upbringing, trust my gut, trust my initial thought on the things that I believe in, whether it's on the field or off the field, because I found that usually gets me back to my roots, and those are really usually the right decisions. I think there were a lot of time periods when you're off, we questioned some of the things we were doing with, you know, particular players playing or the way you played. Certainly, I've had that with Nigeria. We had a few events we played really well, and a few we didn't. And when you got the weight of the country on you, and you start reading. You know, it's either the media is either really positive if you played really well, or the media is really negative to you if you didn't. Right. And I think it's really easy to get caught up in reading those things if so you have to kind of just go back and go, no, I've done this long enough. I know this is the right path, you know. Yeah. And so that's probably it. And I think most people, you know, generally are good. And most people have had good upbringing. And I think we've got to learn to kind of trust our instincts on that. And, you know, that's kind of what I've learned is don't dig too deep and create problems that really aren't there. Don't overthink it. Yeah.
Right. Yeah. That's well said. Yeah. 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 It's really, really well said. Don't dig too deep. I like that. Yeah. So this has been exceptional, Coach. Loved having you, you know, back a return trip. You're doing phenomenal things, obviously, up there. At Pitt in, you know, in the conference, you know, the ACC, home of the, you know, national champion there as well, Florida State, which I know. So I think that has to be said as well. And I know you know that, but for our listeners that, you know, you're going 11-7, but you're also in pound for pound, the toughest, without a doubt, the toughest soccer conference, women's soccer conference in the country.
Yeah.
So kudos to you on that as well.
Thank you.
It's been awesome, obviously, following your, you know, your career there. Wishing you the absolute best of luck as well over the next 3 weeks when you leave on Monday for your World Cup qualifiers with the Nigerian women's national team. But kind of wanted to kick it back to you, Coach. Any shout outs, final words, anything you'd like to share with us?
No, listen, I appreciate you having me on. I think it's great to see the work you're doing there because I know how involved you are as a coach. I know your background as well and the things that you give back to the to the community. But I think this podcast is awesome, a way to touch people that you may not can physically touch, you know, with your work. And I think it's, you know, I think it's commendable for what you're doing too. You're probably not told that often enough, but I'll tell you in front of all your fans there and people that listen to this, because it is important. You know, I think the one thing that we've always got to make sure that we remember is that, you know, we're all, at the end of the day, we're competitors. We compete against each other, and things can sometimes turn into, you know, rivalries. But at the end of the day, we're really all in this to make the game better, you know, to grow the game and make the sport better. And there's a lot of different ways to do it. And you're doing it, you know, in several different ways. But the podcast is a great venue. So I'm really happy to see it taking off like it is. And, you know, and I think that's just word of advice to me. You know, when I was a young coach, the wins and losses were really important. I got worked up a lot because I thought that's the way I would be judged, is in my wins and losses. And as you know, as we get older, we realize I'm not making any declarations on what kind of a coach I am until the kids that I coached have been out for 20 years and, right. and I see what they're doing in the world. Then I'll tell you if I was a good coach or not. Right.
Yeah.
If our players are doing something special out in this world, then I'll know I can rest easy that I had a little piece of that. And so, you know, let's just continue to grow the game and do the things we're doing. And, you know, don't be afraid to share ideas.
Wow. Yeah. I mean, I don't know where to begin on that one, Coach. I think just the tremendous words of advice, tremendous words of wisdom from you. So thank you for that. And then just, you know, just the personal, I really appreciate the kind words. That's not a requirement. You're not getting paid to say that. but it means a ton coming from you. You know, in our world, how highly respected you are, how you're thought, you know, highly you're thought of. And I still think back to that first time I met you out in, we were in Houston. You were still with the Dash, and I'm on the field, standing there getting to see you train. You know, I'm seeing Carly Lloyd and the rest of your girls training as we're getting ready to take the field. I was in the middle of my advanced national course with then NSCAA.
That's right.
And it was an interesting time, you know, during that, because you had the Dynamo training. You all were training. We had our course going, and then later on the U.S. men's national team pulls up. They're training for their semifinal with Argentina in the Copa America. Then.
Yeah.
So it was, it was pretty humbling. So from that day, even on that day, why I mentioned that day is you took the time to, you know, to meet with us, talk with us, coaches, and you didn't have to, you weren't required. And yet you came up to us. So really earned a ton of respect for you, Coach. Thank you for everything. Wish you the absolute best in your spring season there at Pitt. And I know you're going to have the Pitt Panthers headed for far more glory after, I guess, as you put it, right, kind of a program that had been dormant for a long time. But I know you guys are headed on the right track. Wish you the absolute best with Nigeria Women's National Team. Can't thank you enough. You've always made yourself available to us as well. So thank you for your support of the podcast. Thank you for your support of me. Again, for our listeners, the ones who, why we do it, you know, whether our parents, our student athletes, our coaches, right, high school coaches, college coaches, doesn't matter your level, private school, public school, you know, Coach hit it on nail on the head, is let's not forget why we got in this, what we're about, and growing the game, right? Growing the game, and growing the game with quality individuals, leaders of character that go on and produce for, you know, for society after they hang them up and are no longer playing. So thank you. Coach, thank you to our listeners, our supporters. Again, you can find us social media. You can go to our YouTube page at the 50_50 podcast. You can find us on social media on Twitter at 50_50 pod, as well as on Instagram at 50_50 podcast. So for our listeners, thank you again for everything. Sincerely appreciate your support. Thank you to Coach Waldrum. Thank you for giving us your time. We wish you the absolute best of luck. And until the next time, you know what to do. Keep downloading and keep listening.
Thank you.